Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 293 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. On Wednesday, you heard about how SARS-CoV-2 spread from bats to people. Today, we're revisiting one of our early episodes that explores a similar theme. Bats are almost certainly the source of this pandemic, but these flying mammals may also hold the clues to stopping the next one. Bloomberg senior editor Jason Gale has more.
The story of bats and viruses can be traced to an Australian veterinarian, Dr. Hume Field. The son of a policeman, Hume grew up in various parts of the northeastern state of Queensland, where he developed a fascination for Australia's native fauna.
I'd always had an interest in animals, and I guess growing up as a kid, I can remember my parents saying, "Oh, Hume loves animals, he's going to be a vet." And this was really a bit of a throwaway line because nobody in our family had ever been to university, let alone to a five-year veterinary course. But nonetheless, the sort of seed took hold, I guess, at least with me.
When I caught up with Hume, he was in his home office in a leafy coastal area southeast of Brisbane. You could hear chattering wildlife and vocal pets, as well as drought-breaking rain. Hume graduated from the University of Queensland in 1976. He worked for a couple of years in a small animal practice, but his interest in wildlife led him to pursue further study in the evenings, first in environmental science, then a doctorate in the mid-1990s. It allowed him to combine his love of native animals with emerging diseases at a time when the state's agricultural authorities were trying to figure out the source of a deadly horse disease. It was a virus that infected 20 racehorses stapled in the Brisbane suburb of Hendra in 1994. It's thought to have started when a mare called Drama Series was brought to the stables after she'd been grazing in a field at Cannon Hill on the other side of the Brisbane River. Drama Series died 2 days later, and subsequently, all of the other horses fell ill. 13 of them died. What was especially alarming about this disease was that it crossed the species barrier. A trainer and another person tending to the horses became ill with a flu-like illness within days of Drama Series' death. The stable hand recovered, but the trainer died of respiratory and kidney failure. The virus was eventually isolated and named Hendra virus after the suburb where it was found. Hume was asked to help determine how Drama Series might have caught the virus. He went searching the paddock where she'd been grazing and presumably had become infected. He caught rodents, possums, feral cats and reptiles and tested them for Hendra virus. When the results came back negative, he went searching for clues via the people rescuing vulnerable wildlife. Here in Australia, they're sometimes referred to as wildlife carers.
So we subsequently broadened our search and started using wildlife carers as a conduit, if you like, to be able to collect samples from sick and injured animals that were in their care. And it was in that process, so again, quite serendipitous that we actually sampled. We were sampling kangaroos, we were sampling possums, we were sampling the usual things, ducks, a whole range of things that would come into wildlife carers. And there were flying foxes, and we sampled some flying foxes. This was over a period of months. And lo and behold, we found antibodies to Hendra virus in some flying foxes. So We looked at some more flying foxes, and then we looked at some flying foxes in captive populations and zoos, etc. And that's how we identified flying foxes as being, at that stage, a possible reservoir. Then we went on to do further studies, eventually detected an isolated virus, etc., etc. And so now flying foxes, or at least a couple of species of flying foxes in Australia, are recognised as the primary reservoir hosts of Hendra virus.
Flying foxes aren't actually foxes. They're a large fruit-eating bat with a kind of fox-like face and expression. They weigh up to a couple of pounds, and their wings can span more than 3 feet. The finding of Hendra virus in bats was important not just because it helped identify the pathway by which horses and people were being infected. It also made scientists alert to other viruses bats could potentially carry. About a year after Hugh made the discovery of Hendra virus in flying foxes, another opportunity to explore the ecology of viruses in bats presented itself. This time in Malaysia, where pigs and pig farmers were getting sick. By mid-1999, more than 265 people had fallen ill with encephalitis or inflammation of the brain. Of those cases, 40% were fatal. There were also 11 cases of either encephalitis or respiratory illness, including one death in neighbouring Singapore. Scientists found the viral source. It was named Nipah virus, which it turned out was from the same family as Hendra virus. Hume was asked to help investigate the source.
They wanted someone who was who might be able to guide and work with them to find out the natural reservoir of Nipah. So knowing that we knew about Hendra and bats, then we immediately focused, not exclusively, but we certainly focused on flying foxes in Malaysia. And it wasn't too long before we found evidence of Nipah virus in species of flying fox there.
Just as Hendra virus did, the discovery of Nipah underscored the risks that emerge at the interface of wildlife, farm animals and humans. Professor Trevor Drew is the director of the Australian Animal Health Laboratory at Geelong, just outside of Melbourne. It's carried out key research on both Hendra and Nipah viruses. According to Trevor, the emergence of Hendra and then Nipah identified the ways in which bat-borne viruses can spill over and infect other species.
And Nipah virus was a disease also of fruit bats in Malaysia initially, and that virus got into pigs because they were starting to put pig farms into more forested areas, and the feces from the bats got into the pigsties and was thought to have infected the pigs that way. And it killed hundreds of pigs, if not thousands of pigs.
Nipah isn't just confined to Malaysia. Over the past decade, it's caused outbreaks in India and Bangladesh that have killed dozens of people.
We also now also know from incidents in Bangladesh of outbreaks of Nipah virus that you don't need the pig, that the bat can actually also infect humans directly via drinking out of vessels of palm sap that are put onto the tree to harvest the palm sap. And people drink this palm sap, but so does the bat, and they will come down, and the saliva from the bat can contaminate the palm sap and infect the human directly. So we know that is one incident, but certainly in Malaysia now they're very, very careful not to have pig farms near bat roosts.
An even more dramatic outbreak occurred just a few years later. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, emerged in southern China in 2002. It's a deadlier cousin of COVID-19 that quickly spread across the world. Hume Field was asked to help investigate its source.
And because of our experience with bats and Hendra virus and Nipah virus, and you know, a growing awareness that there seemed to be something special about bats and these spillover viruses, then you know, we hypothesised that bats may play a role in the origins of SARS. And so we went down that track. It's interesting to reflect on the significance of the discovery of species of bats and flying foxes as the natural reservoir of Hendra virus, because really that finding, I think, has potentially coloured the identification of bats or you know, sort of underlying the identification of various species of bats being associated with this suite of other emerging diseases that we've seen over time. If we had
the group that Hume just referred to also includes Ebola viruses and Lyssa virus, which causes rabies, as well as a number of coronaviruses, including SARS, and most likely the one responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. So what is it about bats that makes them such great virus vectors?
Bats are quite unique if you think about it in terms of them being, you know, a mammal that can fly. So bats are mammals. They produce milk, they suckle their young, but they've got this amazing evolutionary adaptation or ability to be able to fly, so they're highly mobile. They also typically live in large populations, colonies, roost, whether it's the big fruit bats or flying foxes, whether it's small micro bats in caves. And typically these groups have mixed species as well. They're relatively long-lived animals as a taxa. You know, flying foxes certainly recorded, I think, in captivity to live well into 20s. Certainly wouldn't live that long in nature, but certainly, you know, they live for years. So all of these factors are very attractive for mammalian virus survival and dissemination, if you like.
According to Hume, bats have evolved and adapted to coexist with the viruses that infect them.
And so the thinking was that, well, you know, these are just viruses of bats and the bats are used to them because they've evolved with them. And that's why the bats don't get sick with these viruses. But if they spill into other naive, immunologically naive species, then you know, they have a dramatic, typically a dramatic and often fatal infection. But more recently, people have dug a bit further to try to understand if there is indeed something else going on with bats, and it seems that there isn't.
Hume now works as a science and policy advisor with the EcoHealth Alliance. It's a New York-based NGO that works to protect wildlife and public health from the emergence of disease. Spillover events are becoming more risky. Bats, as we heard, are coming into closer contact with farm animals. But they're also coming into closer contact with humans. A key reason for that is that bats are losing their habitat. Critically, they're losing their natural food source. What you're hearing is the sound of grey-headed flying foxes roosting. It's dusk and I'm sitting on a grassy bank of the Torrens River in the centre of Adelaide, the capital of South Australia. I'm literally a stone's throw from the University of Adelaide, my alma mater behind me, and the Adelaide Zoo on the other side of the river. This is a popular place for the 20,000 bats hanging upside down from the eucalyptus trees above me. It's a familiar place for Dr. Mark Shipp, Australia's chief veterinarian, who is based in Canberra, but also grew up in South Australia. Mark is the president of the World Organization for Animal Health. He told me that bats have taken up residency in Adelaide and other urban centres, but not by choice.
Yes, almost every city in Australia now has a resident roost of flying foxes, and the fruiting and the flowering trees that these bats normally feed on have been largely removed from rural Australia. And so they've been forced into urban centres and suburban parkland where there is some flowering trees and some fruiting trees, but these are not the preferred diet of the flying foxes, and they're putting those flying foxes under stress. We've seen a number of incidents in Australia over recent years with large-scale mortalities of flying foxes due to heat events. Here in Canberra, we had a large hailstorm event which killed over 300 flying foxes. It reflects that they're in centres where they would normally not be present and that they're under stress when they're in those centres.
There's another concern with bats roosting in places like this, where horses are being kept less than a mile from here.
For us, the concern is that where we have parkland, we often have horses, And we know that flying foxes can transmit Hendra virus to horses, and that those horses in turn can transmit that virus to humans. And that's a fatal disease of both horses and of humans. And then there is the risk that the bats themselves will transmit directly to human populations, and there are a number of coronaviruses and other viruses that bats carry and can transmit to the human population.
But there are other consequences of the loss of bat habitat. While these animals can carry some pretty nasty viruses, they perform functions vital for the Australian ecosystem.
They play very important roles in terms of insect control, of pollination and of seed dispersal. The role that they play in keeping down insect numbers, which and insects can transmit disease, particularly in northern Australia, is very important. And then the role that they play in pollinating plants as they move between plants, and then dispersing seeds when they eat fruits and disperse the seeds so that those plants become established in other areas, is very important and is a role that no other participant in the ecosystem can play.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
In the mammalian world, lifespan is generally proportional to body size and metabolic rate. Bats defy both these rules. One bat species, weighing just 7 grams or a quarter of an ounce, can live for more than 40 years. It's one of a number of quirks of these critters. Professor Linfa Wang has been unlocking the secrets of bats since the 1990s. He was the scientist who isolated and characterized Hendra virus and identified its virological cousin, Nipah. Actually, it was Linfa who named the genus to which they both belong, Henipavirus. Back then, he was working at the Australian Animal Health Laboratory just outside of Melbourne. He now heads the Emerging Infectious Diseases Program at Singapore's Duke and US Medical School. For the past 13 years, he's devoted his career to studying bat biology and bat immunology, particularly its defence against viruses. He's brought a number of researchers along with him in Australia, Singapore and now China, where he was born and did his undergrad degree. In scientific circles, Linfa is sometimes known as the Batman.
People give me the nickname of Batman. That I try to correct them to say, I actually don't study bats. I study bat virus.
Linfa serves on the World Health Organization's Emergency Committee, advising the Director General on the current COVID-19 pandemic. It's a reflection of the knowledge he and his 20-person lab have amassed on these animals.
And we have been focusing on the question of why bats. Why bats are so different. Why they can carry so many viruses and themselves do not get sick, and why bats live so long, consider their living environment and also the stress they have during flight and also the pathogen they're exposed is much, much more than a non-flying mammal.
It turns out that the immune system of these flying mammals is different to that of terrestrial mammals. Bats react to infections at an earlier stage, arresting them before they cause any disease. That enables bats to avoid the damaging inflammatory immune response other mammals, including humans, often mount in response to virulent infections.
So our current working hypothesis is that bats have a much better defense versus tolerance.
Pathologists studying COVID-19 and other pathogenic viruses have observed that When the body initially recognizes an infection, various white blood cells that consume pathogens and help heal damaged tissue act as first responders. In some severe infections, the body's effort to heal itself may be too robust, leading to the destruction of not just virus-infected cells, but healthy tissue. It's that inflammatory response that ends up being deadly. Bats don't suffer the same fate.
Bats can defend themselves, launch this inflammation, but they don't go overboard. Okay, so this is a very big area of research, and I think we humans can learn.
Linfer says he's convinced bats offer important insights into the regulation of the immune system that may inform ways the human body can better tackle COVID-19 and other viral diseases.
So my slogan now is my study is basically learning from bats. Bats have so much to teach us.
For one thing, Linfer is intrigued that a species of bat that weighs just 7 grams has a heart that beats more than 1,000 times per minute during flight. It flies for 5 to 8 hours daily and can live for 43 years.
This is all done with the same heart, without any medication, without any hygiene. Imagine that, right? It's incredible.
It's little wonder that Linfer is working with cardiologists to study the heart muscles of bats. Just one of a number of medical disciplines he's recruited into his bat pack.
I have been able to mobilize not only infectious disease people, genomics people, immunologists, and the cancer biologists, and now cardiologists are collaborating with me to study bat. My personal dream, if you have enough money, is to establish a bat institute. I think we have lots to learn from bats.
Bats can help us identify what viruses of pandemic potential are lurking in nature, as well as ways we might be able to mitigate their threat. They're just one example of how humans are profoundly affected by what happens in global ecosystems. To anticipate, prevent, and respond to disease threats like COVID-19 means taking an increasingly wide-angled look at the natural world.
That was Jason Gale, and that's it for our show today. For coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is produced by Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspure, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Original music by Leo Sidrin. Our editors are Rick Schein and Francesca Levy. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.